This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Supercomputers for healthcare, and IBM's Dave Turek gives us his take on the decade ahead. Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for January 15th, 2010. Available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and we have with us once again Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360. Good morning, Addison.
Morning, Michael.
So we're just the second week into the new year. I guess most everyone is out of the holiday vacation mode by now. But are you seeing anything kind of new and interesting? How are people planning for the new year?
Yeah, that's really what everyone's doing right now that I'm seeing is everyone's in planning mode of how they're going to attack, which happens every year around this time. But I think it's particularly intense in 2010 as people are trying to dig their way out of the recession and figure out where the growth is. That's a lot of the work that I'm doing with clients right now is trying to aim people at the areas that are interesting growth opportunities. And I thought one of the interesting data points was your feature article you've got on supercomputing for healthcare, because this is an area we've been tracking where we're starting to see what we call these edge HPC spaces that fall outside the science, traditional boundaries of science and engineering, but with increasing HPC usage. And this is one of these edge HPC potentially types of applications, and we're seeing it at a traditional supercomputing center. You had that story.
Right. This is quite an unusual application that we found out about. It's just in the proposal stage at this point. The researcher, Andrew LaBelle, is a researcher at Oak Ridge with the Computational Sciences and Engineering Division, and he's got a proposal out there to use Jaguar, which is the 2.6 petaflop system, the number one system in the world at the lab, to analyze all of the country's public healthcare data in order to reduce fraud, basically. You've probably seen some recent 60 Minutes program. There's quite a bit of fraud in programs like Medicare and Medicaid, where people are criminally submitting false claims and then collecting it. And it's because the public healthcare system is so prone to this. And the way it's done is basically, and I was sort of surprised to hear this, is basically anybody can sort of put in a claim, as long as all the data is filled out correctly on the form, they will pay you up front. In other words, they don't do any other sort of validation. As long as the data itself looks valid, there's a valid social security number, a valid address, or it's just a filled-in address, and all the other T's are crossed and I's are dotted, they'll send out a check right then. So what this researcher is proposing is to basically take all this data, and instead of doing the current mode where they basically chase the fraud after the fact, it's called pay and chase, is that they feed the data through Jaguar and do the analysis up front and do all the basically the simple fraud detection up front, so they never have to send out the check. And it's talking to Andrew, it's not rocket science, he kept telling me. It's fairly simple. It's not like deep analytics we're talking about. It's doing simple things like, making sure the address and the social security number match, that there aren't duplicates, that the person is alive, that the doctor is alive, things like that, things that are not checked now up front.
And there's a certain amount of data mining involved in this too, right? Comparing a new inquiry against known fraud inquiries to see whether there are certain patterns that match.
Right. I think there's data mining involved, but it's also a stream application as well, because he wants to do this in real time. In other words, there's got to be a database of all these other fields, but he wants to get the information in real time. So the current rate that this is being done for public health care is we average something like 4,900 claims per hour, which is a little more than one per second. And At this point, there's no single computer system outside of the supercomputing world that can keep up with that. That's just too fast. These records are too big. The closest thing we have to it, I guess, is the credit card systems, but those records are much shorter. They're like 50 characters long for like a credit card transaction. So they're fairly easy to do. Health claim forms are something like 10 or 20 times as large. So the throughput demands are quite a bit larger. Plus the data, I guess, is more complex. There's English language fields. There's all these other things in there. So you need basically a lot of throughput computing.
Right.
And so that's why this idea is, you know, you get a computer that can do that with a lot of memory, a lot of processors, be able to do a lot of it in parallel, and you can do it on a Jaguar. So that was the proposal.
Yeah, it's an interesting mix of some of these application types that we track as part of Edge HPC, both complex event processing, where you're looking at the stream of information coming in, looking for the events that you're going to tab as fraud, and it's also a business process optimization kind of application with the high-end BI or data mining sort of implications. And what I'm interested to see is how much they're able to reduce fraud and whether there's a business case for dedicating a computer to this type of application. It'll be an interesting business case going forward.
Yeah, first he has to get the money. Right now, I guess it's been a little frustrating for him. He's got to get the agencies or the government, either, you know, the executive branch or Congress on board with this, because this is such a new thing. I mean, Edge HPC is fun for us to talk about, but nobody outside of sort of our little corner of the world understands it. So trying to convince people in government and in these agencies who basically want to control their own data anyway is very hard to do. So right now he's kind of frustrated just to get some funding. He just wants to get right now a few $100,000 to sort of scope out the project, and eventually he wants to get like $50 million to fund the operational part of this.
Yeah, the other interesting part of it is we look at these different architectures that come into play for these application types. We've been talking about the decade ahead, and one of the things we've been waiting for at the start of this decade was we're expecting the HPCS program to come to fruition with a couple new computer architectures, and you had some news there as well.
Yeah, we saw Cray announce this week, along with their preliminary earnings reports, that I guess, you know, they're having some problems with their HPCS contract for their part of it. IBM and Cray were the two finalists on phase three of the High Productivity Computing System program under DARPA, and we're now in sort of the final year or two of that contract, where they're setting milestones and fulfilling that contract. And it looks like in the last quarter of last year, they either missed a milestone or there was some discussion about it, and there was like a $7 million shortfall in the contract. And it looks like they're going to renegotiate the final part of the contract on the Cray side to the tune of like $60 million, which is pretty significant, because now that means there's basically $92 million left on that contract. So that's a pretty big chunk. So there's definitely something going on there. Not quite sure what. Cray wouldn't really comment about what the nature of those modifications would be, but it's going to be different than the original contract was specified for.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll find out over time, but I don't want in the rest of that news to get lost. The main part of the story was that Cray was tightening its guidance on 2009, saying that they had record revenue and essentially a break-even year, to maybe a slight loss, but essentially a break-even year. And I think to come out of 2009 as a hardware vendor and be break-even is quite an achievement for Cray. I think there are a lot of companies that would have liked to have done that well.
Yeah, a lot of companies would have loved to break even that year. I mean, there was some expectation or hope that Cray would actually post a profit this year. They had a lot of contracts that went through, that a lot of money was coming in because of government contracts due in part to the stimulus program, both here in the U.S. And in Europe. But for various reasons, they probably just missed a profit. Maybe they'll come in a little below it. But overall, they did have a good year. They paid off all their debt, and they're set and looking forward to a bigger 2010, where they do hope to show positive revenue.
Yeah, and going back to the HPCS topic, the other company at the high end, IBM, is certainly interesting, and we've had them in the news kind of on an ongoing basis. And as we look forward to the year ahead and the decade ahead, it was an opportune time to talk to Dave Turek, the Vice President of Deep Computing at IBM.
We're joined by Dave Turek, Vice President of Deep Computing at IBM. Welcome to the show, Dave, and Happy New Year.
And to you too, Michael.
Hey, Dave, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Happy New Year to you.
Thanks, Addison, and to you too.
One thing that we were talking about with it being New Year's, Dave, is we're kind of put the wraps on 2009, which was quite a year behind us, and we're looking forward to a new year and a new decade. And I was interested in just getting your thoughts looking ahead of what your outlook is for HPC in 2010 and the decade beyond.
So it's always interesting when we look ahead to actually look back to assess our ability to really predict the future, and I think that everybody would agree that the last decade was characterized by substantial uncertainty, a lot of technological innovation, and a lot of transformation to the industry at large with respect to new companies coming into the space, other companies exiting the space, broader deployment of HPC in a variety of market segments that may have been, relative to the prior decade, somewhat unusual. You saw the rise of digital media, for example, and, of course, a number of other areas like bioinformatics, et cetera. So as we look at the future decade, it's clear that that'll also be marked by uncertainty. And there are some guideposts that give us some insight into where this is headed. And I think that there'll be certain themes that'll reflect themselves through the coming decade. One clearly is the implications of technology and its consumption of power, and how power as an operating expense will begin to reflect itself in the minds of CIOs and others who acquire this kind of equipment with respect to the purchasing decisions and how they pursue it. I think corollaries to this abound. Certainly one corollary would be the extent to which there'll be a progressive focus on the integrated whole computing environment, including the data center, as the kind of entity that one looks at from a procurement perspective to really decide what one wants to do. I spoke at Supercomputing back in November, and I said that my prediction for 2010 would be that we would start having keynote speeches in forums like Supercomputing that would focus as much on data center design, structure, implementation as we would on computers per se. So I think that'll be a theme that will carry us forward in the decade, and it will give rise to all sorts of interesting potential solutions. I think the other theme that I see coming is characterized by technological uncertainty. So we've come out of a fairly predictable era predicated on the advances that come from Moore's Law that started to erode at the tail end of this last decade. And I think that that will result in progressive transformation over the course of time, both in technology and also in business models. So there will be this continued pursuit of multi-core. That, in turn, will drive innovations with respect to packaging and memory and programming models, et cetera. So all that will be coming, and some will see it as disruptive, some will see it as inevitable. The marketplace will sort that out. I think the other thing that will happen is you'll begin to see a lot of innovation with respect to pricing models, especially when you think about ISVs and software licensing models. You know, the interesting thing as we look back in time a decade or so is that it was quite customary for ISVs to price in such a way that as a customer accrued benefit courtesy of Moore's Law, a new micro came along, faster clock speed, greater speed of the computer in general, no incremental value is extracted on the part of the ISV from their client. But in our current world, where you add incremental cores, which, by the way, in aggregate aren't going to give you a linear speed up, the licensing paradigm that many ISVs use still are looking for a fairly dramatic payment of incremental monies or licensing fees back to the ISV. And I think that we're beginning to see some mild marketplace reaction to that. And I think that it bodes for a lot of consideration, experimentation, and potential turmoil. And then I think the third theme that will characterize the decade will be what happens internationally with respect to high-performance computing and supercomputing. We've seen in the last decade the erosion of some historical players in this space, talking about companies that have may have gone into eclipse or decline in some fashion. And yet the demand for this style of computing is being recognized broadly in the international community as quite critical for either achievement or maintenance of economic competitive advantage. And so one of the big questions will be, what happens on the international stage? Will it give rise to the emergence of new companies, not U.S.-centered? Will it stimulate some of the classic U.S. companies in terms of the kinds of opportunities that present themselves overseas? So I think this is another big theme that will characterize the coming decade.
Dave, switching to maybe a more near-term concern, we're looking at the final phase of the DARPA HPCS program that's going to play out over the next couple of years. We just saw it in the news this week where Cray, it looks like, was having a little trouble with that contract. They're going to mod the contract on the Cray side. I'm wondering what's going on the IBM side of that contract.
I think that as we engaged in the HPCS program a few years ago, one of the things that was critical for us was to ensure that we actually had a customer for the system that we were building under the auspices of DARPA. As you probably know, DARPA stimulates and supports research, but they actually don't buy systems. And the terms of the HPCS program require demonstration of the technology being produced under the rubric of the program. Now, given the scale of what everybody was purporting to do in this arena, in the absence of a customer, that would have been a horrific financial burden. And I think it's frankly a flaw in the way that the government thinks about stimulating research. I mean, I think there always needs to be a consumer of the technology produced, and not simply a paradigm that's centered on producing technology for the sake of it and then kind of hoping for the best, or hoping that the commercial enterprise, IBM, Cray, whoever, can find a customer downstream. So we were fortunate to align ourselves with the University of Illinois, and we've had a very effective partnership over the last few years with Illinois to collaboratively develop technology and to ensure that the design parameters that characterize what we're doing with the HPCS program are going to be accommodating to a broad-ranging set of applications, helpfully defined by Illinois. And upon the completion of our obligations at DARPA, we actually have a customer for the technology for whom this technology has been pursued and produced. Beyond that, we also struck the design strategy for our HPCS effort in a way that would really feed our commercial HPC business over the coming decade. And so you see a lot of content in what we're doing focused on software tools, programming models. Some of this is embryonic, admittedly so, but we think it'll resonate in the marketplace with respect to what we see some of the pending kinds of technological transformations in the coming years, especially with what I alluded to earlier in terms of the pursuit of multi-core technologies and so on. So we've been fortunate to have a commercial partner to drive this forward to ensure that the technology pathway we took would resonate with where we think customers will have a need for the deployment of this technology. And it's really helped to stimulate a lot of collaborative effort and a lot of innovation, specifically on the software side for us. So we think we're in good shape, and we've made our milestones, and we're on target to deliver according to the initial contract.
Dave, you've mentioned Moore's Law and multi-core a couple of times, and Michael and I have discussed Intel and AMD as well as NVIDIA extensively in their processor roadmaps. We haven't talked about IBM and processors that much. What are your thoughts on processor development?
So IBM has a very, very significant and strategic commitment to processor development. For the casual listener to the podcast, the scope of what we do in terms of processor development is actually quite broad and ranges from embedded devices all the way up to processors that serve the most profoundly integrated and significant servers on the planet. And that strategy will continue through time. Now, that's a statement about market coverage, but in terms of technology, we have very, very aggressive ambitions that are driven by our view of where we need to be by the end of the decade, where we've been pretty declarative about our desire to be at the leadership of the whole pursuit of exascale. So we are probably the only company in the industry that has control over all the critical technology required to realize an exascale kind of vision. We have operating system, we have microprocessor, we have the tools, we have packaging skills, we have all these things under our control. And as a result, the nature of what we're doing in exascale, one would expect would be highly integrated and very well designed with respect to easing the transition over the course of the decade from where people are today to where we think they'll be by the end of the decade. So the signpost of exascale stuck out there roughly 2018 is something that motivates the nature of the microprocessor development we're doing on the server side to see that those kinds of ambitions can be met. And we think that multi-core will certainly be a key strategic thread that floats through this whole period of time. But we also think that it would be erroneous to put too much emphasis on the microprocessor and to detract from what we think will be more pronounced shifts in terms of the importance of other previously subordinated technologies in terms of what the systems of the future will look like. So, for example, one can get quite wild in terms of characterizing multi-core. How many cores is enough? Is it 100, 200, 1,000, 10,000? Who cares? What we really need to think about is what constitutes the design of a balanced system? How do we make memory available to these cores? How do we orchestrate communications, et cetera? And I think that has a lot to say about what the future designs of memory technologies will look like, packaging technologies, programming models, tooling, et cetera. So if we thought of the last decade or two as something that was very much centered on microprocessor as sort of the characterizing element that defined whether something was good or less good or what have you, I think the role of that begins to be complemented in an equivalent kind of way by this constellation of other technologies we've talked about here. And that's simply the reality of the design constraints at a system level of what the implication of massive multi-core will imply. So we have, courtesy of the HPCS program, a very aggressive pursuit of microprocessor technology to realize those ambitions, but we extend that technology through the course of the decade to get us to the point of being able to produce palatable, affordable, and useful exascale systems by the end of the decade. And I'll make one more comment about this notion of exascale. Some people think the pursuit of exascale is a pursuit of a machine, to say that, well, you have an exascale machine. For us, this is all about the evolution of technology over time, and we talk about exascale not in terms of the machine that we will build, but we talk about it as a vehicle to really encapsulate the portfolio of technologies and issues that have to be dealt with. Because after all, nobody can stay in business if their purpose is simply to build an exascale system. I mean, I think historically, we saw that the pursuit of the Earth Simulator, for example, did not equate to actually producing a business result that anyone wanted to follow. That was the pursuit of a single system. And I think that that's contrary, certainly, to where we want to be. There are a whole set of milestones along the way to exascale, which will make petascale progressively more useful, and that will presumably make the transition through time as simple and as utilitarian as possible. So we're trying to avoid major discontinuities that would accrue to any potential client to ensure that they'll have a fairly seamless ability to exploit technology as it becomes available.
We've been speaking with Dave Turek, Vice President of Deep Computing at IBM. Dave, thanks very much for joining us and giving us your thoughts.
So Dave shared a few of his thoughts on Exascale, the HPCS program, processor development. Anything in all of that strike you as particularly compelling, Michael?
Well, the HPCS discussion was particularly interesting. It basically confirmed that Blue Waters is coming out of the PERCS technology, which is being funded in part by that HPCS program, and the significance of that to that program. They actually have a customer that's wrapped around that technology that they can talk about, and they're looking forward to, you know, presumably more customers in the year ahead. Now, that system, which presumably is the prototype system for PERCS, isn't going to go online until 2011, and maybe that'll be one of many, but at least we see some positive results from that HPCS program, which, of course, DARPA sunk a lot of money into. So that's good news, and hopefully we'll see a lot of results out of Blue Waters. There's certainly been a lot of news about it, and scientists waiting to get their hands on that platform.
Yeah, that confirmation of Blue Waters as the initial PERCS installation is certainly interesting, and I also appreciated Dave's forward-looking views to Exascale and more or less confirming this notion that we're going to get there by 2018, but with a focus on what are all the different components that that'll bring us along there. He talked a lot about the need to have a data center kind of mentality in terms of the power requirements of a system and all of the infrastructure it takes to get there. It kind of brings us back around full circle to the Jaguar healthcare example at the top of the podcast. You know, it'll be interesting to see how all of these architectures and applications develop.
Right. I think that was a good point, the fact that, you know, you can't build these exascale systems with the idea that you're just going to build one of them and then move along, because that doesn't pay the bills for these companies. Now, often, you know, we've seen these sort of leadership computers, especially like these first milestone computers, come out, and they really are one-off computers. You don't see them again, but sometimes you see the technology get recycled into follow-on computers. But yeah, I think all commercial entities want to avoid that. They want to, you know, use their investments to produce commercial products, and even if they're the first one through the gate, they want this to be a commercial product for more than just one customer. That just makes sense. So
yeah, it's my impression that that's essentially what happened with BlueJean. It was supposed to be a one-off, and then it was an architecture that people liked, and people kept buying them. And by the time it was a 10 or 12 off, IBM got to the point where it needed to be productized.
Right.
So, you know, the problem is it's hard to do that on purpose.
Yeah. Now, we have seen other systems that were one-offs. I think, you know, we saw Roadrunner, which basically I think is the last of its breed, although the cell technology might live on in other systems. But in general, like a lot of the systems at the top of the top 500 now are commercial systems, and they'll have long lifespans. Like you mentioned, BlueJean, you know, we're going to look at the follow-on BlueJean Q system, as well as the PERC systems based on Power 7. Cray is going to continue the XT line for a while, for the foreseeable future. So these are all commercial systems, and it'll be interesting to see what actually comes out of the Cray HPCS program and see what the modified system turns out to be, and if there's any commercial takers for that.
I agree, and all stories that we're going to be tracking as we go forward.
Definitely. Well, we'll get back to it all next week. Well, hopefully we'll see the news pick up again, and once we get into the third week of the new year, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.